YPG's desert rats tested weapons of war so they'd work when soldiers' lives depended on them. Thousands of veterans walk the earth today thanks to their work. After decades of service, all that's left is Testament. Desert Rat Testament is a monthly anthology that collects the stories and recollections of retired Yuma Proving Ground employees of decades-long service.
Hello, I'm Mark Schauer. Colonel Stephen Kreider graduated from West Point and was a field artillery officer before joining the Army's Acquisition Corps in 1988. He served in multiple test and evaluation roles for 15 years prior to assuming command of Yuma Proving Ground in 2003. In addition to leading the post during the Global War on Terror, he contended with base realignment and closure concerns that have never since returned. It seems to me you were commander during the most harrowing days of our experience in Iraq. And initially the threat was from mortar attack, but quickly evolved to combating improvised explosive devices. Can you take us back to those days?
I came to YPG, whereas I came from the Pentagon and Office of the Secretary of Defense, and was there on 9/11. So I clearly understood when we got bombed what the terrorist situation was. And my directive from General Armbruster when I took command was two things: enjoy my command and do what's best for the Army. And the key to that was, in my opinion, was the BRAC situation that was going on then. And one of the things that came out of the BRAC study and responses was we needed an electronic warfare capability. So we got special approval from OSD and built the first jerk site up there in northern Cibola Range. So it was a big part of my command and continued as for the jobs afterwards.
And NACATEC was built up from nothing to hundreds of employees working 70, even 80-hour weeks all throughout the year to combat rapidly improvised explosive devices.
Yeah, so the first day, once we got special approval, expedited approval, was I walked with the commander of the test center at the time, Lieutenant Colonel Shane Dietrich. They cleared the road as we walked it, and the bulldozer was behind us building the road for the first time into that first jerk site. So it was everything in real time, and I think we had, in my time there, almost over 200 different systems come through that site. Of course, we expanded it to plans for other jerk sites, and we even placed a phone system, and it was a large part of my command.
And there was nothing precedent to that anywhere within the Department of the Army, really, was there?
No, we have not had an electronic warfare testing or even training capability in the United States for many years. And so it was the first design, and then we helped China Lake build theirs, and so we had an additional site for the Navy support. So, no, it was not something existed. It could have existed back in our history, maybe, but a long time before I got there.
During your command, there was also a lot of work to defeat mortar attacks, counter-mortar radar systems, and so on.
Counter-rocket artillery, mortar, electronic warfare, balloon system, a lot of aerostat work, a lot of the attacking. We built a special operations terminal attack control course for the first time, working with the special forces, and built that up in the northern Cibola Range to support the effort. So pretty much anything, rifles, vehicles, anything that existed over in Iraq and Afghanistan came through YPG first during that time frame.
And of course, YPG's bread and butter has always been indirect fire weapons, artillery. There was a lot of that testing going on too.
Oh, the standard capabilities, you know, again, environmental, anything that went to the desert, whether it be rifles, whether we were checking oil for systems, whether it be tank rounds, whether it be mortars, electronic warfare, IEDs, communication equipment, helicopters, anything that was going over there to the war came to us.
The remarkable thing to a lot of people was not only the intense pace of the test mission during those years, but that we accomplished every single test without fumbling one or dropping one, and we did it safely. How did you manage all of that?
Well, the biggest resource that we found out, again, when I first came in almost day one, the question was BRAC, not necessarily the war at that point. And we did an assessment of capabilities and such for the proving ground. The number one strength of the proving ground, of course, is its people. And just behind that is the resources that we have. So if you got the best people and you got the best resources, then you're going to accomplish an awful lot of things. And a lot of what we plan came out of the value of BRAC or why we stayed is evident in all pretty much every part of YPG today in terms of its capabilities.
Do you think the support of the broader Yuma community, the broader civilian community in Yuma, made a difference in those years?
It's always made a difference, maybe more so in terms of the central focus that we had in the external on the war, but whether it be the Marine Corps base or whether it be the mayor or the delegates in the area or whether it be the people, they're all supportive. And it's the best community, in my opinion, in the United States for support to the military, and it stayed that way. And so they're a large part, and that's where all our workforce came from. So they appreciated it and supported it, whether it be rodeos, whether it be balloon festivals, baseball games, parades, derbies, or any kind of thing in town. The commander of the Marine Corps base and I were all invited and we participated as equal to pretty much anybody else in Yuma. It was a great environment.
Precision airdrop was another area of the mission that was expanding during your time in command.
Yes, primarily on the civilian side, or I should say on the soldier side, for individual parachutes. So the T-10 parachute was developed and tested there, but we were also doing NASA work. We're also doing a lot of experimentation on long-range parachutes for supply drops. And again, between the weather and capabilities, you couldn't do it pretty much anyplace else. So, yeah, it's a large part of our work.
And during your years, another big test commodity was the non-line-of-sight cannon. And once you left YPG, you were the Deputy Director of Future Combat Systems Combined Test Center.
Yeah, I went from YPG to the opposite coast, Aberdeen Proving Ground, and became the director of the Combined Test Organization. So anything that had to do with the Future Combat System vehicles, robots, long-range Excalibur, electronic warfare vehicles, and new cannons, and new everything, Future Combat System was developing at the time, went through my office as a coordinating office for all testing. So yeah, I continued to work with YPG and the other developmental test command and then onward to ATEC support that they needed. So yeah, large part of the operation.
Also did a lot of work at YPG in your next capacity when you were Program Executive Officer of PEO Intelligence, Electronic Warfare and Sensors. So what was it like seeing these systems come back to YPG for testing after you've been commander there?
It was great. I understood the capabilities and certainly talked to contractors and program managers and had things sent there and was able to connect down with the right leads, whether it be Julio Dominguez or Scott Deliker or any others that were the leaders at the time, making sure you connect the right people to the right places. So it was very satisfying to know that the YPG capability was there and could support my PEO, two PEOs, Future Combat Systems, and then when I became PEO, IEWS, 5 years of capabilities. It still continued. You see in the Outlook paper, pretty much anything that you're still testing is still an outgrowth of that time frame.
I remember during those years we were testing the Husky vehicle, and you were had a big part in developing that system.
Yeah, that was part of the Future Combat System.
Once you retired from uniform, you were inducted into the C5ISR Hall of Fame last year, wasn't it?
Well, I've been honored to have a lot of great people working for me and a lot of people and guiding me and stuff. So I got a couple of those awards, and I always say it's not the award for what I did, it's for what the team did, because nothing can be accomplished without that. So, yeah, my time in YPG, my time in PM before that, and my time in Future Combat Systems and IEWS is all related to great work and things that have come, but it's all because of the team people. So they inducted me in the C4ISR. I was a gold medal award for the Association of Old Crows and a couple other things, but it's all really back to the people and the team, things that we did together as a team. I just was the head representative.
I recall you came back to visit us during the YPG 75th anniversary celebration.
Absolutely. It was an honor to come back and get to see a lot of good people and have a lot of fun and maintain the history, which is a large part of what people don't really know, going back to World War II. And it was a pleasure, and my wife enjoyed coming with me and saw a lot of old friends, so it was a great time.
Do you still keep up with YPG at all these days?
Well, nowadays it's either the Outlook, which I get delivered to me, or whether you post something, typically most of it's coming from you, Mark. And I see things once in a while. I still consult. I still work as a civilian employee for PEOIWS up until last month on the position navigation and timing aspect of their work. So although I haven't been out there in a number of years, and I don't know the exact things that are going on, I'm still one of the experts in the big picture side of the house and can direct things toward YPG when it's appropriate.
Do you think YPG's well positioned to go for another 80 years?
Absolutely. My objectives when I first came in was because of the BRAC, do what's best for the Army. And when we did the assessment, I mean, the first 2 months of my command, I didn't spend but an hour a day in the office. I went and met every person in their workplace. I visited every building, drove every road on the campus, flew every airplane, fired every weapon, to come to know what the capabilities of YPG was. And so I felt like I had the biggest picture and helped the YPG then do a strategy plan for a strategic plan. And BRAC ended up being a breeze for us because we were in the five different categories that they rated posts. We were in the top three in all those five categories. So, no, I don't think YPG's going away anytime soon.
When you were in command, that was the very last time there was ever even any whisper of a potential BRAC.
Yeah, that's the last one we actually went through the whole process. There's been whispers that don't necessarily leak down. Since then, we've gone through a couple of small little ones, but that's been the big thing. And people realize what the capabilities, and that's why it was used so much in supporting the war, and why it was so instrumental in supporting the war, is because we knew what we could do, and we were relevant, and they still are relevant today.
Colonel, it's really been good talking with you today.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
For as long as the United States has a military, Yuma Proving Ground will be vital to the national defense. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on The Testament.